Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by internationalhealthplans.com. If you're planning on traveling abroad, you should know that most health plans here in the United States, health insurance plans, don't cover foreign travel. You want to make sure you're covered, and you can get covered for as little as $1.25 a day. Visit the website, internationalhealthplans.com. Coming up, going to visit with Larry Reed, President Emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education. Right now, we have with us Mark Shulman. Mark is the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. It makes history so much fun, and it's good for kids of all ages, including you and I. Check it out. It's historycentral.com. Mark, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. So coming up, I think, in a couple of days in Israel. And by the way, for our listeners' benefit, you are in Tel Aviv right now. You're going to be, observing.
Tonight, it actually begins tonight as Memorial Day in Israel.
Oh.
And Memorial Day in Israel is very different than Memorial Day weekend or Veterans Day in the United States. The evening before everything closes, there are no stores open, there are no restaurants open, you can't get delivery. It's completely, everything is shut down. Hmm. At 8 o'clock in the evening, there's a siren goes off, a moment of silence throughout the country. And in the course of the evening, there are various memorial services that take place. In Tel Aviv, it's been for years, I call it a sing-a-thon, but it's not really. It's basically songs in memory of soldiers who have died. And in between, they tell the story of a particular soldier who died in one of Israel's many wars over the years. And then tomorrow is sort of a day of work, but not really. At 11 o'clock, once again, there's a siren. For 2 minutes, the whole country stops. There are memorial services in all of the military cemeteries throughout the country. In the morning, usually, current soldiers all go visit their previous high schools and join in the memorial services that take place in their high schools.
Oh.
And so it's a solemn, very significant event, and that is followed in the evening. It becomes Israel's Independence Day, so it's a very jarring experience in the sense that Israel goes from absolute mourning to celebration of independence, and this year it's the 75th anniversary of the founding of the state, so theoretically a significant year, but it's of course been this year that's been marred by all of the demonstrations and attempted at judicial changes, etc. But these 2 days are very significant on the Israeli calendar, and they have and they've done well, let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, I certainly admire how citizens in Israel observe Memorial Day, and certainly they're really observing the sacrifices that the military and people have made for their own lives in terms of preserving the freedom in Israel. How much of this do you think has to do with everyone serving in the military?
It has a large degree. I mean, don't forget, not everybody, the ultra-Orthodox and the Arabs don't, but all of the rest of the country does. That has a major impact. I mean, I think I understand why the United States stopped the draft, obviously, but it has its negatives, obviously, and there's not a universal sense of we're all participating, we're all part of it.
Yeah.
I also think, the over-commercialization of American culture, right? I mean, we've managed to turn Memorial Day weekend into a shopping weekend, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's something wrong. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with that. And America, look, America hasn't had the sort of losses percentage-wise as Israel's had over the years. I mean, not since certainly the Civil War, maybe to some extent World War II, but since then Vietnam, Afghanistan, Korea, maybe a little bit more, but by and large, it didn't touch that many families.
Mm-hmm.
In particular military communities, absolutely it did, obviously, but across the broad spectrum of the United States, it didn't have the same impact. Here in Israel, there's almost nobody who didn't lose either a direct relative or a friend in one of the wars,
yeah.
Certainly up until about 20 years ago. Now, it's, relatively speaking, these last years have been peaceful would be too strong a word to use, but not to the extent that the earlier wars and even the earlier terrorism was much worse than it's been in the last 15 years or so.
Yeah. Well, and of course, the assault continues on Israel from many fronts. And I would imagine that just everybody, because they've served in the military, has a real granular sense about what it's all about for the sacrifices that have been made by others in their history. So,
right. Look, I mean, you know, the studies that have been done about war and why people fight, almost every study comes down to you're fighting for your fellow soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're doing. I mean, you're obviously fighting for your country, for this and that. But everything's said and done, when the gun starts firing, you're firing to save your fellow soldier more than anything else. And there's that tight-knitness, that, you know, and also keep in mind the fact that most Israelis do reserve duty until the age of 40.
Wow.
It used to be much longer. They used to do reserve duty until the age of 60.
Yeah.
But that was cut down over the years as things have changed. But, you know, even 40, you go once a year, maybe twice a year, you get together with the same group of people every single year as you get older, and they become a very tight-knit family when it comes to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark, we need to take a little break. Can you stick around?
Yes, and I'll try to silence my dog in the meantime.
Okay. We're going to have more here on the Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of the Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
You have questions about your retirement? Ameriprise Private Wealth Advisor Jason Nardella with Nardella Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, can help. With the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach, you'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap to get you where you want to go. Call Nardella Financial Group today at 239-325-1041. That's 239-325-1041. Office is located at 9015 Stratistel Court, Suite 103, Naples, Florida. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Finish what you started with a Hodges University WHEEL. You can complete your bachelor's degree in as little as 1 year with your previously earned credits. What's the WHEEL? It's a customized bachelor's degree in organizational management. Learn about and apply the business, management, and leadership skills you need to advance your career. You can get unmatched educational experience with classes held once a week on campus in Fort Myers, in Port Charlotte, or Naples. You'll be immersed in classes taught by professors with real-world experience in the areas of business, management, and leadership. This degree can be applied to all areas of professional career. Learn more by calling 239-938-7700. That's 239-938-7700, or visit hodges.edu. Stay near and go far with Hodges University.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. We're brought to you in part by the Foundation for Government Accountability. They get the politics and know the policies. They help prepare your elected officials to have winning strategies in state and federal legislatures. You can find out more by visiting thefga.org, thefga.org. We have with us Mark Schulman, the founder and publisher of HistoryCentral.com. Again, Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
So, Mark, the big story today is what's happening in Sudan, this escalating problem of almost civil war.
Yeah, I would say it is civil war between two generals whose egos are too big. They're not fighting over ideology. They're not fighting over anything, you know, tangible like that. Each one thinks they should be in charge, and they have their soldiers following them. And it's very sad, you know, dozens, maybe even hundreds are being killed just because of the egos of these two generals. The U.S. successfully evacuated all of its personnel, but still there's the issue of all the civilians that are stuck in Sudan at the moment.
About 12,000, I think.
Right, yeah, something in that number. And it seems the Russian Wagner Group has decided to take sides and is helping one of the two groups. So there's some of that involvement as well.
So is the Wagner Group a paramilitary type of group?
Yes, they're a paramilitary group that's tied into the Russians. they're the ones who've been involved in, first of all, they got all the recruits from the convicts from the Russian jails to fight in Ukraine.
Ah.
So that's what they're known for recently, but they also have a more elite groups of mercenaries that work all over the world for payment. That's where theirs is in terms of that. So, yes, Sudan had some opportunities to becoming a democracy, and it's gone the other way, I'm afraid, and it's sad. What can I tell you?
Yeah, my understanding is that years ago they were a democracy. They had an elected officials, and the military decided to take over these two generals, and they agreed to do it together. Then they had a falling out, and that's why they're having this disagreement now.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's just, again, it's not over ideology, you know. It's like, if it was over ideology, I could say, not that it's a good thing, but at least you can understand when something is over ideology.
Yeah.
But this is hard to understand.
So this is, of course, Africa. So does this splash on countries around the continent?
Not really at the moment, at least, because it really is this internal fight. I mean, even though, like I said, the Russians are slightly involved. But again, it's not over anything that a specific that people are going to take sides on. It's very much a personality-driven issue.
Interesting. Well, we'll watch and see what happens here. Let's move to what's going on in Ukraine.
Okay, so we're not really sure what's going on in Ukraine. There is some rumors to the effect that the Ukrainians have begun the counteroffensive.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really know whether it's true or not. Obviously, they're not going to announce it. They want to get as much tactical advantage as they can.
Sure.
We'll have to see. I mean, there's a sense that they'll pick the opportunity to make sure that they're successful.
Right.
They're still, of course, trying to get as much Western arms in integrated as quickly as they can. And they've had about 40,000 troops have been now trained by either the U.S. or Great Britain in Germany primarily, so that they have, you know, they have a new army basically, and as opposed to the Russians who just threw people into the combat, they actually took people off combat and started training them. They were able to do that because they were able to defend their lines without all of their personnel, I guess.
So interesting. There's I'll call it a rumor, a story running around that. There's a shortage of ammo on both sides, actually, and in the United States.
Right. No, there's no question there's a problem of ammo. We've discussed it before. The industrial base of the United States has been allowed to deteriorate over all of these years. No one really expected a modern war in Europe that would consume such large amounts of artillery shells and other consumables.
Mm-hmm.
And we really don't have the capacity to produce the numbers that are necessary. I know one of the companies has gotten a grant to increase the size of its production, and they're putting on additional shifts, but all these things take time, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's not World War II where, you know, you can just turn the company, you know, the assembly line that was making Fords to start making bombers, let's put it that way.
How about materials?
In what sense?
Well, in terms of the materials to make the ammo.
No, that stuff exists. That's not a problem. I mean, it's mostly steel. It's explosives. None of these are the rare minerals that we all worry about. That's readily available in the United States. We have more than enough materials to do that. That's not the issue. The issue is literally the production capacity of a manufacturer's and their ability to increase that capacity, because to increase the capacity, you need more machinery. Machinery, of course, is something that takes time to build and create, and you need more personnel, and there's, generally speaking, a labor shortage in the United States.
Yeah.
So the two things together make it difficult to increase production rapidly enough, and so there is that shortage.
Well,
the Russians also have the shortage, so...
Yeah, exactly. So, the other concern, of course, is the nuclear power and how it could be used. Any update on that?
No, I mean, look, the Russians, if they haven't used it until now, it's very unlikely they will, unless things get really out of control. I mean, would Putin do that to hold on to office? I mean, I would say probably yes, because as we've seen around the world, it doesn't make a difference whether it's the United States or in Russia or in Israel or South Africa or you name it. Rulers do not give up their rule easily.
No, they don't. Well, and How about the proposal that Ukraine join NATO? That was something that was coming up just recently. That's so provocative.
Right. Well, that was, look, the question is, eventually, I'm sure Ukraine will join NATO. It's an eventual sort of thing, but it's eventually after the war is over and there's some sort of peace. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why Ukraine shouldn't join NATO. It'll be a democracy and it'll be a very effective war-making machine, so NATO would certainly welcome them. The odd thing or the sad thing from the Russian standpoint is, you know, they claim they were going to war to protect themselves from NATO expansion, which wasn't being planned. What was the result of going to war? They ended up with Finland, who was neutral, joining NATO, Sweden about to join NATO as soon as it can get through some issues with Turkey. Whether the countries of Europe are doing enough, they're doing many times more than they were doing until now in terms of armaments and rearming and spending money on defense. And the really interesting thing I read recently is there's actually a committee that has the power to say to a different country and say, no, don't. They told Denmark, for instance, stop spending so much money on submarines. We don't need more submarines. We need whatever else it is. So they turned to the Canadians and said, we need more airlift capability. We need you to buy more airlift aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
And literally acting in a way that in concert, and NATO has really come back to life without a shadow of a doubt. And the more interesting things also is that the doctrine of NATO until this war was that the American troops would be there as a tripwire, but they wouldn't defend every square foot of Europe when they were attacked. And they have to bring troops in from America and from wherever else, and then they would counterattack and take back the territory from the Russians who had attacked.
Mm-hmm.
But after seeing what the Russians did in the towns that they conquered in Ukraine, all these countries, Poland, Lithuania, Estonia, all these relatively new members of NATO are saying, no, we're not willing to give up an inch, and we're going with forward defense up to the border.
Mm.
And they're doing that with the support of NATO at this point, but it changes the whole doctrine of the sort of warfare we'd expect, and also requires a larger number of troops in those countries.
So interesting. Ukraine's known as the breadbasket of the world in some senses because of all the grain it produces, and yet I think Russia now has threatened to disrupt delivery of grain around the world. Any comments?
Well, they keep on trying to do that. There is this agreement to allow the grain to go, and last time the Russians gave in. Will they do it? So far, they're allowing it to go because they're also making money from it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they really don't want to turn, you know, they're trying to get some fringes from Africa and other places, and so the last thing that these countries want is to be turned, you know, cut off from grain, which they need to feed their people. So I think they're going ahead with it for practical reasons at this point, allowing the Ukrainian grain to be exported. They have until now, so I suspect that will continue.
All right. Thank you, Mark. And finally, China seems to be in the background of almost everything that's going on and it's kind of meddling in all kinds of world's affairs, both in Russia, you know, South America, Africa, you name it. Any comments?
Well, look, they're an expansionist power at this point. Like I've said, I think we're overestimating them economically, but maybe we're not. I mean, I don't know. They clearly want to be felt wherever they can. And they've certainly been involved in Africa and South America in terms of financing projects. And then when the countries can't afford it, they come back and force to, you know, do collection, shall we say,
yeah,
against some of these countries. So, we'll see a continued more active China throughout the world. The question is they're also having a hard time domestically and maintaining their control. The latest thing today was they came out with rules relating to chatbots, you know, ChatGPT, etc.
Uh-huh.
So these chatbots that operate in Canada have to maintain the communist line, shall we, the communist government line on a whole bunch of subjects. So good luck with that one.
Yeah. We'll
have a Mao chatbot soon, you know.
It is warfare on a number of fronts when it comes to China, for sure. Really, and to your point, they are an expansionist power, and they intend to continue to expand. Again, Mark Shulman, the founder and publisher of HistoryCentral.com. Again, a website that is good for kids of all ages, including you and I. I hope you'll check out HistoryCentral.com. Mark, I genuinely appreciate your commentary here on the show. Thank you so much.
Have a great week, Bob.
You as well. Thank you.
All right, coming up, we're going to visit with Larry Reed. Larry is the president emeritus of a terrific organization. It's the Foundation for Economic Education. That and more right here on the Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of the Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.